I like, you know, the junior and the big people on Kona Island.
Let me get my glasses.
I forgot to ask you about what kind of houses you lived on the farm. You told me in quite detail about the house on Kona Island.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if you could tell me how large of a house you lived on a farm.
In a farm? Mm-hmm. Well, we lived in, had a kitchen and a living room, dining room, was all in one big open. And there was four of us, the mother and dad, and we had our beds upstairs. But it's not like we have nowadays, where you have plenty of space upstairs and you can walk around. It's just mostly for sleeping, because our houses later on were built like on a sled. And so your father finished with cropping in 1 year or 2 years, he stayed on the ranch. And after his lease was up, then he'd have to go someplace else and find another farm to farm. So he would have to put his team of horses onto this, hook it on the house on the sled, and pull the house with him. And then later on, when they got to know the Japanese more fluently, and they knew what kind of type of people they were, then they would let us lease their homes, and we could stay in those homes. But many of them lived in tents, and some of them lived in a makeshift. If the lease stay was 3 years or 4 years, but that was more probably able to spend a little more money and live longer, so they would build a little more. On the side is all like a wood, and then the top up part is all canvas. And then when they're 3 years, 4 years up, if the canvas was good enough, they'll take it. Otherwise, they just take the side of it and then move on to the next ranch. And my uncle had, Uncle Nishi had so many children that he really homesteaded. And he'd go to the reservation. First one, I think, was Indian Reservation, and he would tell the government that he would like to farm. So the government says, well, if you till the land and make it going, and you can see that the water's on there, then they will give you so many years. So that's how he farmed. And he's still up that way. He's passed away, but his children are still carrying on, one or two boys.
Do you know what kind of Indian
was? No. House of Fall, I don't remember. But their graveyard was up in what I call White Swan in Yakima Valley, Yakima County, I think. And their graves were all up there in the hills, beautiful snow-capped mountains, and below those, that was the Indian burial ground. And they would pass in front of our ranch to go there on the buggy. No, I haven't. I never went back to where I went to school or, well, I visited where I was born. That was important. But I never went back to where I went to school. And it was a kind of ruled out, you know, out in the country. Maybe had 40, 50 students from kindergarten to eighth grade. And we had two teachers. They divide the classes, and on Fridays the music appreciation teacher would come, and we would sing just before lunch, and that was, and the health doctor would come, I guess it's about once a month, and when they found that a lot of children were starting to have goiter, why, they would give us little iodine pills, look like a little chocolate, and every Friday, we'd all line up, regardless, oh, we're going to get a piece of candy, because candy was very scarce. But it really wasn't candy, it was iodine, you know. And we were in line to eat the pills. Well, we went to school on horseback, but parents were so poor, they couldn't afford to give us a horse, so we rode with some people, otherwise we all walked. And we cut 2 miles, 4 miles every day to go to school. So we get up with the chickens, and then by the time we get to school, it would be about 8 o'clock and school starts. In summertime, wasn't so bad, but in the wintertime, when it rained or snowed, it was very hard for us to go to school, but we managed. When it rained, I used to be so thankful. Oh, it's raining. I don't have to go home and cook. Because I was the oldest and I had to cook for the family. My mother was working outside and on the ranch. And she doesn't come home just like Daddy does. So when I come home, I had to get supper started and see that the bath water is gone. And, that bathing outside, you know, like in Japan. That's what we had. And get the fire started. And we had coil oil lamp stoves, and for hanging it up. Some nice homes had little mantles, but we couldn't afford it, so we had the regular lamp set with kerosene lamps. And I had to get the wood stove going and see that on the side there's a, oh, this is about 10, 15 gallon cast iron tank that fits to the stove where the fire goes. And that's where you make your hot water. So I had to do that. That had plenty of water in it at night before the folks came home. And that the cows' cloths were full of water and the horses' cloths were full of water. So there was no time that you could sit down, because if you did, and parents came home and that wasn't done, you know what's going to happen.
Was it your mother who was upset
that
you really hadn't done your work?
Well, my father and my mother both. They both were upset. Probably I got more schooling from my father when I was young, because I was the oldest, and he said I should know better. And all the time I thought, gee whiz, how come my other sisters and my cousins are getting scolded? And then later on, as I grew older, my uncle said, you know, you're the oldest. And you're supposed to guide all these guys. I said, oh, yeah, but look how many. That's over a dozen. I said, I'm not a sheep herder. But he would laugh. But now, looking back, it did me good. I don't mind doing hard work, just aggravation that something, you know, goes wrong. And it doesn't go just right, then it kind of bothers me. But I really don't mind hard work.
Where did you get the water for the house?
Pump.
Oh,
well.
Oh, the
well. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was it communal or was it?
No, all of them drilled, as long as I've known. And a lot of these places where my father went to work in these barnyards, they had a pump. And so lots of times we would go there and get the water and carry it home. And in Japan, out in the country, well, I've been there so I can talk about it, but they have a barrel and they call kame, and they have to fill that with water. And that's what we had to do. If the barn was, say, 500 feet away, then we'd have to go and get the bucket and put the water in that and bring it and fill that kame up. So in case we need water or something, we'd have water.
And your father was from Caucasian?
Some Caucasian, some Indians.
And do these people live, like, by the pond?
No, they live, none of them live real close to those that had land. The Indians, they didn't live near. They live many miles away, I presume, in the kind of in their own, like a commune, I presume, because I remember times when they used to go to, we got all our groceries in a little trading post. You get your meat, your groceries, and then the flour, you make our bread. My father would take the 100 or 200 sacks of grain, and he takes to the mill, and they make the flour for you, and then we have to go and pick it up. And the Indians, they didn't, weren't able to do that, so they go to the trading post and they buy so much. But you see, the government had to take care of these Indians because they took the land away from them. So according to each individual, they got so much sugar, so much flour, and staple goods, beans, and so forth. Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. I was small, but I knew what was going on. I hear my father and uncle. When it came to real financial, I didn't hear too much about it, but like you're buying a potato seed or a grain seed, and you have to go and, like, potato seed, if you got it close together, there's worms in the soil. So if you plant the same seed twice, then it's not sterile. And so to get those wireworms in them. So they used to get the potatoes from Idaho and Montana. And I remember times they used to say, oh, the potatoes are small. My uncle went to see some samples and they were too small. Some of them are too big and there aren't not enough eyes in it. Because we used to cut it ourselves, the potatoes. And my mother used to help Daddy plant. So I've heard those things. And I was real small.
No, they were immigrants from Japan.
Working on that.
Mm-hmm.
Were you a real thing? Like, oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. When I was just a little tiny, my father, I used to say to him, oh, I said, so-and-so's got a beautiful horse. I was real small, too, maybe about four. And he said, yes, but we can't afford it because, he says, I can just have a two team of horses or four team of horses for the land. And on top of that, we can't buy build nice homes like those people because they take it away from us and we can't buy anything. And I asked him why, and he says, well, that's the law. Well, I didn't know what law was. And then one time my father says, oh, we got this much money this year. And we're going to have this much for our next crop, but we'll put it away in the bank. But this, we can't put it in the bank. And I heard my mother say, well, we'll take and we'll send it to a brother in Japan. And then later on, I found out that the reason why they didn't want to put the money here because they weren't making any use of it. They couldn't buy land. They can, but if they sent it to Japan, maybe their brothers and sisters who were poor maybe could have used it or something. But anyway, I found $50 at a time send money to Japan. And then later on, when I went back in 1936, they had put it away for them.
How feel there's a contradiction there. You're going to school with Caucasian children, right? And then you find out that they're all lost after your parents because they're immigrants.
Well, at that time, I guess I didn't take too much heed and think about that, Kelly said, hi, Vicky. But my mother used to explain it to me, what that meant. And so when we went to school, she said, you cannot do like the Caucasian children do, just outward and do things and you can play and things like that, but when you go to a club or something, she says, I don't think you should go because if something come up, then I was the oldest of all, and I'd probably get pinned down and have problems. So my mother didn't want me to have problems because she'd tell me to come home. So I came home, and that meant that I weren't able to dance. I wasn't able to go to parties and have nice clothes or anything. But I was satisfied because she explained it to me. I guess children in those days, there were one boy. I understood he was in Los Angeles, but he's passed away now. But George, he got his first motorcycle in that, like say, Elsinore. The first boy to get in Elsinore. And his father did very well in farming. So George got a motorcycle. And he was tearing down and had a neighbor girl. We went to school together there. I think they were in 8th grade, both of them, and they had an accident. And George had broke his leg, and he was on crutch, and I forgot her arm was in a sling. But I was still small, about 2nd grade. I thought, oh my goodness, that machine is terrible. So I come home, and I tell my mother that George got an accident, broke his leg. My mother asked me, what happened? She said, oh, I understood he went over the bridge, and he broke his leg. And she said, what? A motorcycle. And she didn't know what motorcycle was, see? And I told her a little car. And George was the oldest of all of us, I think. We went about 8 miles out of town to a little further, and there were a lot of, in Wapato, and there were a lot of Japanese homes, I mean family there. They would have pool hall and a restaurant and a tofu. Sophia and hotel. But when you live out in the country, and especially when you don't have no transportation, maybe once a month or so, is when you were small, I don't think I ever went to town. When I went to my uncle, I was so scared. I just, you know, like a pup following somebody, you just hang on to your uncle and go every place he goes. Now, most of my friends that when I went to school together, some of the Japanese children that went with me, most of them are gone or sick, they tell me. And I thought, well, I'm not fortunate. I live out here and able to take care of myself and the family. And my cousin come once in a while from Washington, and he says, oh, so-and-so's sick, so-and-so's not able to do this. I said, my goodness. Well, in my time, we all really did work pretty hard. You know, because the parents weren't able to afford it, and then the war broke out, and then we were still tied down again. That's World War I and World War II, see?
This is sort of going off the subject, but other times, do you remember doing anything special for New Year's at the
Academy? What?
For New Year's or the Japanese holidays?
Yes, New Year's. You mean, how do we celebrate? Well, my father was very much in the Oriental style. So, he had our sushis, our ozoni, and whatever. The first thing in the morning, New Year's, he said, don't sleep in. He said, you'll start the New Year right. And we'd all come and sit around the table. Nobody was cooking there. I had to get Nita cooking alone, come sit around the table. And he'd give us all omiki. And in order to make the omiki, he had to go many, many miles to buy that little sake. But he went and got it. And we'd have this morning ceremony, and then he wants us to sing Kimigayo. And so all of us children knew Kimigayo, and when I came to Ball Island, something we had. And we started singing Kimigayo, and everybody looked at me. Where did you learn that? I said, my folks. Oh, yeah. Well, I said, you folks all here speak good Japanese, and how come you don't? I said, well, they have some, but it's in a club or something, they sing, but not in a home. But until my father died, even here, every New Year, he gave us our omiki, and after we get through, we had to bow our heads, and then we would sing to Kimigayo. But after he passed on, we haven't done that, but he was really... And he always taught us, you always have to respect the elderly people, and regardless what predicament people are in, if you feel in your heart that they're in trouble, if you can help them, you should put out your hand and help them. And like I said before, he was more willing person to help, and then he wanted to have the children have good education. We had many things in that pertaining to Japanese culture, but during the World War II, I think they just kind of scattered and we lost them all. And we had a lot of awards that was given to us from the Emperor of Japan and different things, but, you know, there was so much scare that we just burned them or buried them. When I went back in Japan in 1936, I didn't have no problem. A lot of them were just, oh, they didn't like the gofujo, and they didn't like the way they had the food, but I went through all that, so there was no hardship. And I carried water on my back, and I went to Hirami, and I kwayashi, and I put it on my back and go up there, and people, the young ones come by, and they look at me, and it's just, oh, Amerika-san ga kwayashi motte yama yangari. Hirami yangari yatta. They're talking the tongue, you know. And so my father-in-law would say, omae wa erai na, kyo kwayashi mottanda na. And I said, well, I didn't want the old lady, the old ba-san, his sister, she's much older, and to her to carry that thing. So I let her take care of my two little girls, and I put it on. I said, if she can do it, why can't I do it? And I didn't want the people to laugh at me, so I put the two taro on this stick, and I practiced in the house at nighttime. So when I went out there and balanced my water or my fertilizer, then, you know, people would laugh at me. If I told that to these people, I guess they would laugh. My father-in-law says, what are you doing? I said, I'm practicing. What are you practicing? He says, tomorrow we're going to carry this kwayashi down to the... tell me, and I want to practice. I don't want people to think if I stumble and fall down and get all that crashy on me. He laughed. And I did that 10 months. They had a strike between 19, let's see, we came to California in 1928. 1929, we went to Tomoe Island. And at the time when the Wall Street went down, it was 30 or 31. Okay, they were getting 25 cents an hour. And 1929, my husband graduated high school, sent me to high school, and he was going to do bookkeeping because he's a commercial student, and he wanted to go to USC. But his parents were poor, and he said, well, you shouldn't go to school, you should work a little bit. So he was going to work, but there was no work because of the depression. So I remember him taking Obento and go over on the ferry onto Palos Verdes and go pick beans and peas. I don't know how much they got. That wasn't very much. He knew more better than I would about that. But my mother and I know they got 25 cents an hour.
How did the stipend get? Did the stipend get there?
Yes.
Did it get there?
No. No. They didn't participate in the stipend. No. The most of it was longshoremen that work on the dock. I don't think the fishermen. I know they, well, they had to make a living somehow, so the decanter said, well, that's all we're going to pay you, and leave it or take it. And they didn't want the children to starve, and they themselves, so they worked at that price. In a way, they took advantage of them, I'm sure. Because homes were nice and clean and everything, but nobody really put on a fancy front. Those that were very, very well-to-do and had big ships and tuna boats and sardine boats, they had nice refrigerator and things, but we couldn't. We just had a regular ice box.
So
the Canada
boats,
they
the Canada
River? No,
they
didn't bother the Canada at that time, no. In fact, a lot of people really didn't know what they were getting into.
Did they have gotten longshoremen?
No.
Can you start to work at the ferry company? And you were also working at the doctor's office. What kind of service do you get?
When I worked for the ferry company, 1930, 31, before that, about 30. Yeah, I got about $75 a week, 8 to 4. I went to work for the doctor. I worked a few days, and his doctor's wife became ill, phlebitis. She had two little baby children, and so the doctor asked me if I would go and work in a home, and I went to work in the home. Some after school, and then holidays. Then after I graduated, I think I worked a little while there too, but not too long, because I had a better offer and work in the office. Then when I was going to high school, and then when I was working also, the outer harbor, they had foreign ships come in, and they have to quarantine them. I went to interpret for the immigration there. I don't recall how long, but I was still in high school when they hired me, and time to time I would take the bus and go out there and interpret for the immigration. I worked in the vegetable stand on weekends sometimes. I went to clean homes and babysit. The sister that you had interviewed, Elsie, she went to work for a Navy officer and as a doctor, a naval doctor, and she stayed there a long time. Until they were going to take her to a foreign country someplace. And my mother hated to let her go. So I heard her and my sister talking. She liked to go, but Mama said so she didn't like to let her go, and she didn't go.
She said that she worked in the
academy sometimes. Oh, yes, she sure did. She looked like a man. Put on those overalls, you could get up on those tanks, just like my father, and she sure was. She's a hard worker. I remember some of the men that came off the fishing boat would call her, you know, she was a tomboy. But she sure was hard. She worked hard in the ranch after we came to Culver City and lived with my auntie for a while. And she worked so hard that, and hot and so young that she kind of had burned her kidneys from the weather, and we're not used to it. worked so hard, and she kind of went blind. We had to put her in Mary and David's clinic for a while, and then she come out of that. But she's a hard worker. She's still working hard for my sister. She's got a good husband, you know. He doesn't say anything, so they don't have any children, but my mother feels sometimes kind of sorry that she didn't have any children and she's still working so hard. But what would she do if she didn't work or do something? I tell my mother, we're fortunate that we can all work in good health. So I said, work won't kill us. Yes, I have.
Oh, yeah.
After I came home a weekend or so, for instance, my mother had to work 24 hours, and she gets very, very tired. And so I give them supper, and then during the supper time, till maybe 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, till they have what they call a break for oyatsu. Well, I would work that shift for my mama. She'd rest at home. And then when the oyatsu gets there, and then she's fresh again, so then I come home and I sit and go to school.
Do you provide
them
the
oyatsu? They all go home.
They
all went home,
What kind of fish do you do?
Well, mostly they cut the fish. Like my sister, then they open the trough, and the fish will slide down in the flume, and then goes on these big conveyor belts, and the fish will come down the conveyor belts, and whatever you want, you put it towards you, and you take all the intestines out, and you push it back on the conveyor belt. And wintertime, it's all sardines. The sister and them would open this trough, and the fish will come down in front of us on a big trough. And then on this conveyor belt, the engine is, and the fish is going like this, see? So you feed the fish in this.
Mm-hmm.
And then the head comes off, and the tail comes off, and then it cuts it in the center, and it goes on through, and there's a brush, and it takes all the intestines out and goes into some brine, and then it goes into a can, and that's cannon.
How long do you
live in
the
room
that you work in?
Canneries? Oh, that's a business. Big as my business over there. Many of them.
How long do you live in the
room? Oh, maybe 5,800 women working at a time. And sometimes if they're real busy and not so much fish can, then they'd open up some more. And if it's Spanish mackerel, they couldn't get them all on the machine, then they open up another wall and they have a big table. And then they would rest the fish on the table and they cut it and let the intestine drop and they put the cut fish on the conveyor belt and go. Oh, it's a big one. And there wasn't just one, there was many, many, you know. Del Monte, St. Sardine, which is La Santorina now. And five, six of them. So Van Camp Seafood, St. Sardine, Del Monte were the biggest. White uniform. Yeah, you have to wear just like, nurses like type of uniform, short sleeves. You had to wear rubber gloves. And rubber gloves, if you're not allergic to that, but if you're allergic to too much oil on that from the fish, then you had to wear rubber gloves. Then on top of that, you wear cotton gloves. Because the fish is so slimy, I slip, so you have to wear cotton. And every one of them, every time when they get through and they wash and sterilize their gloves, they put a stick in there and they're all mending. When you pass their home out until now, you know, there's over 1,000 people there. All the women are sitting outside and mending their gloves. Then there was some gloves that came from Japan, cotton. They had fingers in them that would fit them. But some of them wore them, but some of them said it wasn't practical. It'd wear out, and so they used a cotton glove. And they would all stand out there, and everybody. So they were white uniform, boots, and sweat, you know, boots. And they wore like a shower cap made out of cotton, all white. No other color, it was all white.
Were these uniforms provided by the
family? All the workers provided their own.
Overtime than somebody has to work 24 hours.
Yeah.
Did they get extra for overtime?
Not during the Depression. After we left, after World War II, they told me that they all joined the Union. So they had to give them time and a half, but not before. Mm-mm.
There wasn't that much union activity?
No, not too much.
Do you know
where
we're going by the name of
Imada Hasko? I'm familiar, but I can't place this. Yeah. Is this kind of round 3 centimeters?
No, I think.
I'll bet there's some pictures in there. There might be. Mm-hmm.
I think she was after them that overnight, and maybe the moon.
Oh. No. No. That must have been after World War II. I can't recall World War II. Although, you see, after I finished high school, and 1936, I was married. Then after that, I worked with my parents for a while. In 1939, I came to Elsinore. So I really don't know some of that. Only that we had quite a strike and longshoremen on the dock. But I used to know a lot of those men come on the ferry. And
is this in
Tamala?
Tamala.
Oh. All these dolls were given to my oldest daughter Yusko when she was born and when she was a year old. She has a complete set of them still. And this past last year, I took these over to my son home in Irvine. We put these all up, and I put all our children, some of our kimonos and some of these, to all the other girls. And we could pick them. Mm. But really, you're good. You're just going to give me this one. I still have this one. I know about that. My mother gave that to me in 1936. I still have that. This one I graduated 8th grade. And I came from Washington in 1928. Okay. That's me when I was a baby. There's me, there's my sister Kathy, there's my brother Tom, and my mother and father.
Your parents look really young. How old
my father, when I was 35, when I was born, my father was 35 years old.
Oh, really?
He didn't get married because he was the older family, and he had to help his mother, because his father died very young, to take care of the family. My mother came to the United States, I think she was only 19.
So they were quite
ancient. Yeah, sure. He couldn't even boil water because he came from a home where they had the maids and so forth that he didn't have to. Because he used to tell me that it's a big jump from a well-to-do home to a farmer's home. But he kept to come because her brother was my father's good friend. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you need that back. And there's me again. That's when I was born. With my mother and my dad.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Dr. I think it was Sheila. They're gone now. Mm-hmm. They lived out in Portland. And this one I was about to. Oh, and they moved to Seattle. Then boy, Portland. And I have that lazy cat blossom on there.
Oh, you see that?
She won't throw it away, and I said, oh, you see it. Well, that's the kind of the small. It's not small. And it's not big. My cousin laughed off.
a school teacher back in Cleveland, Ohio.
This is Jesse, cousin of Yo,
my brother Tom.
And Cheeto,
your cousin.
Your cousin Jesse and Pam and Elsie and Jim.
Is this the closest?
I don't know who they are. Must have been a family something. Could have been my uncle.
Because
he used to drive a lot. My father, he got me behind a touring car and started driving. He started driving to the horse. He said, "Whoa, whoa." I said, "Daddy, we're driving a car." And then slipped on the brakes. These are my school friends. Russell lived across the street from me. Mm-hmm. I still remember. Right, what I went to high school in the hospital with all. Happy boy. This is our neighbor boy, Tommy.
Is it really dry, isn't it?
Yeah, I could say dying. Not like Gardena, the man. Not good guy like Elsinore. Mm.
That's
horrible. There's my dad. There's my son. There's Jesse and Leo and Elsie and Tom and Jim. I can play the kids, but I'm looking long and I got stuck in there. This was about the year when I left Washington to come to California.
Mm-hmm.
I said, "Really, believe me, Mr. Sakamoto."
Daddy.
He's there, Geese.
Oh.
Geese and Duff. Oh, that's my father and his friends. I went to Japan in 1936.
Mm-hmm.
And this is my father's home upstairs. And this boy, Yo Yamamoto, he's in Tokyo, Yokohama now. But one thing is, this boy is in Osaka. He's living up there, too. Seems like a boy, huh?
Mm-hmm.
And this is, you know, we're called the Lumi House a lot, but we think of nothing, our neighbors. And this was at a Christian church when I became about 12, 13 at the church. Marco was a very staunch Methodist.
Mm-hmm.
And he would take us to Sunday school in the car. And this, he's dead now, too.
Thank you, Lumi. You know, she's in Sunday school.
Myself and Elsie, and that's a good deal. This is when I came to California. Well, in Santa Monica, I don't recall that place, but there's a Japanese garden. 1928, 29. They took us on Sunday to this garden, and then they took us this place. And Tori born. That's the same garden. This group is that's Ohana. They used to teach us how to have flowers on a tissue paper.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to the class, maybe a few months. If I moved it to Long Island.
I think it was Japanese.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It was Culver City. Oh, it's left us. That was a husband. And this is quite well. It was the girls and Venice, Culver City, Sentinel. Well, a lot of them came. Some of them are gone already, but there's one girl here, Mary Kubota. She had lived out here in Long Beach. And had some people come in. We went through here, and then we went to the garden. We never looked how it was.